very specifically, your kids should not have that phone in their bedrooms at night when they're going to sleep. A really interesting thing to look at is how often those phones are buzzing when your children are supposed to be doing homework, going to sleep.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Super You Podcast. It's the podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. I'm Jake with Equal Man Studios. Welcome to the show. Today, Equal Man sits down with the superintendent of Baldwin Union Free School District on Long Island, New York, Dr. Sherry Cammie. Dr. Cammie also served as the past president of the National School Superintendents Association. Her innovative approach to education and career exploration programs has been recognized and published by The Hill, Education Week, Education Dive, U.S. News, and much more. Equal Man and Dr. Cammie speak on the impacts social media has on our children in school, why her school district has made media literacy a graduation requirement, and how parents should make informed decisions when it comes to their children joining a social media platform. Thanks again for joining us today on the Super You Podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode, a conversation with Dr. Sherry Cammie.
Well, welcome to the show, Dr. Cammie. I am so pumped to have you on here as a father of two daughters that are 11 and 13. Much to talk about. Obviously, I'm in the wheelhouse of schools and social media and having written Socialnomics. It's coming to full fruition here and now. And so welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. This is an important conversation.
Yeah, so we're not going to beat around the bush. We're going to be provocative, get right into it. We just saw Mark Zuckerberg not too long ago on Capitol Hill having to turn around and apologize to parents whose children, mostly teenage daughters, took their lives as a result of social media. So the question we have here is, in your mind, do you feel that social media is killing our kids?
So I think that we have to take a very definite stand about the use of technology in our kids, particularly the technology that we put in their hands. I think it's a collective problem, therefore it's going to require a collective solution.
No, it makes sense. And is one of the solutions, do you feel we should age gate social media? Because if you think about cars, it took us a while to figure out, hey, seatbelts, probably a good thing to have in the car. And then a little more time to figure out, hey, seatbelts with kids under 16, mandatory law. Or just if you think about bike riding, all of a sudden a helmet's a good idea. Let's make that a law. And so do you think that social media should be age gated?
So I think that we take precautions for our kids with a lot of things, some of which you mentioned. There are certainly age restrictions on what we allow our kids to watch on TV and in the movies. We do this all the time. I think in part we do it to help parents. We do it to certainly protect our kids. This is an example of something that we have just allowed to happen without any precautions whatsoever. What specific precautions? I think there's a bunch of specific precautions, but what I do know is that our parents are asking us for help. Our parents are asking us for assistance in protecting their kids. I don't think that they are specifically saying, there are some, obviously, give us a law, give us this. I don't know a single parent who is not looking for assistance in protecting their kids right now.
No, I agree 100%. And knowing we're dealing with the here and now, there is no law. Personally, I think there should be an age gate on it. I think it should be 16. I'm a guy who wrote Socialnomics saying get into this stuff, and then realizing there's a lot of impacts. Basically, I think I'd have 99% of every parent's vote if I said, hey, are you behind the law that requires social media to be 16 before the kid gets in it? But obviously, that's not here. So let's deal with the here and now. When parents reach out to you and your team for help with, let's get specific on social media and even more specific with teenage girls, what's the advice that you give to those parents so that they can help their kids as best as possible?
So we have had here in Baldwin a number of workshops for parents to offer specific advice. I think, interestingly, more than anything, it's created an environment for parents to realize that they are not in this alone, that everybody is struggling with the same thing. So, you know, very specifically, your kids should not have that phone in their bedrooms at night when they're going to sleep. A really interesting thing to look at is how often those phones are buzzing when your children are supposed to be doing homework, going to sleep. One of the things that we're talking about doing here in Baldwin is having just a street games day. You know, I'm a kid that grew up in Brooklyn a long time ago. And, you know, we didn't make play dates and we did not have social media. We just went in the playground and whoever was there, we played with them. And a little bit more outdoors, a little less indoors, a little less electronics, a little bit more, you know, jump rope, play with a ball, like let's go back to the basics kind of thing. You know, what's interesting is that I think we have all ignored the science around brain development, whether it's girls or boys. Boys recover a little bit quicker, I think, you know, but that's historic. Thinking about whether our kids have not only the social capacity, but the emotional capacity to deal with something as sophisticated as a smartphone. That slipped right past us. So as a school district, we're working with our parents to get them to understand why it's important. We're giving them the tools to help them, but we can't do this alone. None of us can do this alone. It's not possible.
No, it's good. It takes a team, you know, it's interesting. And you mentioned having the phones not by their bedside. So we, with my girls, do that. So it's just downstairs. They've got to charge them downstairs. But it's hard when there's a sleepover. So specifically, even if they come over to our house. So when they come over to our house, it's you got to have the guts as a parent to kind of be the uncool parent. And my wife and I are like, hey, no, it's your turn to go get XYZ's phone and to tell them, hey, in this house, we charge them down here at night. Most of the time they're receptive. It's your own daughter that's like kind of going, ah, don't embarrass me. But it's like, hey, in this house at night, the phones all have to be down here and charging.
Yeah, for sure. It's the same situation. It's just a different tool, right? So when my kids were younger, it wasn't a smartphone. It was, you know, the parent controls on TV and cable television, you know, it's always been something, but it's never been so small and so portable. And it's never been, I think, so pervasive. So I would say, if you know, it's cool to be the uncool parent. How's that?
There you go. You know, history rhymes, right? It's MTV was going to rot everyone's brain. And it was like MTV wasn't inherently bad, but what's bad about it is if that's what you do for 3 hours, you know? And so it's, you can watch it for a half hour and then go out and play and whatever you need to do, do your homework. So that's good.
I think the power of what's on it, though, you know, do we recognize that we've put, you know, I don't know about you. I'm not sure when I ever gotten a gift that cost, you know, between $1,000 and $1,500, especially as a 10 or a 15 year old. But I think, you know, and I know I sound like an old person right now, but this is really not about that. This is really about caring about our kids and making sure that they have the growth, they have the maturity to deal with that. But think about the access to information that you have in the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. Whenever have we allowed little kids to have open access? You know, we talk about the mental health crisis and, you know, people want to talk about the mental health crisis in schools, but it's not the mental health crisis in schools. Mm-hmm. We just are the receivers of thousands of kids on any given day. And so we get to see it. I do think that there is a very, very strong link to the societal pressures, to the access to information, to the terrible news that's out there every minute of every day. And little kids don't know how to negotiate that. I don't know why we're even asking them to.
No, you're right. I mean, if you think about even something like porn, these kids have access. There's no filter like there used to be. It was a little harder to, you could still access it back in the 80s and the 90s, but it's just more difficult to gain that access. Now, the beautiful thing about some of this digital stuff is that there is a digital footprint. That's a double-edged sword. It could kind of ruin your career, but also at the same time, it's a little easier from the court of law. It's easier to see that footprint. It's like a digital stamp, like this bullying occurred because we can actually see it, rather than he said, she said in the hallway. It's actually, there's that physical print. So switching quickly into that, because you might deal with that, digital bullying or cyberbullying, what's the advice there? What's being done, or any advice and insights there would be great.
So the advice is the same, right? If, yeah. You know, first of all, there's a real definition for bullying. It's one of those overused words. Mm. When we were kids, we always had kids who bothered us. That's not bullying, right? That's just the traditional, somebody acted stupid or said something stupid and we're reacting to it. But bullying is that ongoing, pervasive, constant behavior that makes kids feel unsafe. And that is not as pervasive as people want you to believe, because it has a real definition. As far as schools go, you know, if there are situations, regardless if it's a one-time somebody did something that offended me, or it's an ongoing situation, we deal with it. But imagine that now that situation exists 24/7. So if there are kids that are at home with the device you gave them as a parent, being mean to other kids, then they show up in school on Monday, it becomes the school's responsibility to deal with it. You know, in our day, it was the parents' responsibility to deal with it. And so I think for me, the question really goes all the way back to the beginning, which is, who gave you that device in the first place, and who allowed you to be on that device in the first place? And I think for parents, because I don't want to demonize parents, I really do feel for them. The real question is, as a community, how do we get together to all say that, you know, we're all going to be those, quote, bad parents, and say, you know, you get a half an hour on this, and now you have to put it away.
Yep. No. So true. So true. And then this is a tough question, and we'll segue into something else. But if there was one social media tool that you could block today, or just have it removed, like, man, if that one didn't exist, that's the one I'd pick. Like, if you got the magic wand, you're allowed to make one go away, which one would it be?
Well, kids don't use Facebook anymore, so I wouldn't pick that. Although I think adults are mean on Facebook as well. You know, certainly Snapchat is one that everyone thinks it goes away. Mm-hmm. Doesn't go away. It's sitting on a server somewhere, you know, let's be honest. You know, for everyone that we might dismiss, a new one will show up. So it's not, for me, it's not about a particular social media platform. It's the whole concept of being connected all the time and not being able to step away. You know, I remember when I took my kids on a cruise and I said, nope, we are not paying for data access. It's not happening. And we pulled into port when the cruise was over, and both of my kids thanked me for not paying for that data, because then they turned on their phones and all the nonsense started rolling in, and they just felt like so relaxed for the week that we were away. And I think kids deserve that. They deserve to be able to step away from the nonsense that goes on out there. You know, the other thing that I would say is adults need to be really conscious of their behavior as well, because kids are always watching us, always, even when you don't think they're watching you. And when they see you doing things online that's mean or hurtful or disruptive, they do the same thing.
Yeah, they may not listen to what you say, but they're watching what you do. That's for sure. That is 100%. I love that the cruise story, that they're like, oh, thank you. Thank you. One of our youngest, she has to have one day where it's a detox, because she was more into it. And then it's crazy. There's like 500 messages, and she learned she can't read through all those. So she just deletes them. Yeah, and it shows her too. She's like, I guess this stuff's not that important if I can delete 500 and my day still goes on. I love that you mentioned Snapchat. That is by far the number one answer. Not that you gave that as an answer, just you mentioned it. That's the number one answer that we get from that question from most of the people that we ask, is Snapchat would be the one that they'd want to go away. Now, switching gears quickly here, because we've just gone over a lot of the negatives. I'm always, technology is generally net positive over the long run. It's just, we go through these blips, right? Just the car analogy. Car arguably has probably helped us. And so you kind of improve the car, make it less bad for the environment, you know, add seatbelts. So still refining that. But over time, technology, not good in most instances. These kids can use Duolingo to learn a language. How cool is that? And augment it with the great classes that you have at Baldwin. So you've got the peer-to-peer learning, you've got the in-class learning, you've got Duolingo at home, you've got edX at the college level, you got Khan Academy if you're having trouble with math, and just a different way to learn. You can kind of go on and use Khan Academy, other tools that exist out there that augment the great schools like Baldwin. Now, you guys do some very progressive stuff. So just to pause, just to kind of set, just explain, you know, Baldwin, where you're located, and then some of the interesting stuff that you're doing, that some of our listeners, not only parents, but superintendents listen to this, that they can learn and kind of go, oh, that's pretty cool what they're doing at Baldwin.
So Baldwin is a school system, pre-K to grade 12, located on the South Shore of Long Island, very much a middle-class community. We are diverse in our demographic makeup. In some ways, it's like, you know, a sleepy community. I remember when I came here, I kept saying to people, I feel like this is the 1970s, you know, everybody gets along, and it's a very, very lovely place. I would say in terms of our school system, the philosophy here is that it's not 1970 anymore. Mm-hmm. So the days of sitting in rows and columns in classrooms is over. We know that what businesses want are collaborative thinking, problem solvers, or even problem predictors. And so we have revised our curriculum so that our students are doers. We ask all the time, we have a phrase that we use, students as producers. So it's not what did you teach, but what has your student or what has your class produce as a result of their learning? Very much hands-on, digging deep, thinking, communicating, collaborating. Mm-hmm. So, you know, specifically at the high school level, we have academies that are not schools within a school, right? They're designed around electives, but our kids spend a lot of time outside school and they're leaving to learn. So they spend time in industry. So if you're learning, for example, radiology, what better way to learn that than to actually be in the field of radiology? We have kids that are full-time college students in grade 12 because, you know, as I'm sure you know, our kids, you know, we've all had that senioritis, right? And so if you're ready to move on, then we create the opportunity for you to move on. So a lot of experiences outside school as well as inside school, a lot of redesigned learning spaces so that they're more modern, they look like and feel like business. So that when you graduate high school or you graduate college, you're prepared for the world of work once you leave and once you get there. But really just thinking of students as learners, what engages them, what keeps them interested, how do you get their minds to think deeply?
No, that's wonderful. I love that you guys are having them learn, leaving to learn. That's good. Like leave to learn. So it's a combination of those two things. So I love it. I love it. It's so good. Superintendents, it's crazy because Dr. Arnett here in Austin, the guy's amazing. And I go, you've got to have three of you because I go to all these things and you're at the musical. And then I go speak. I was speaking somewhere at a Rotary Club. Like, how are you here? Like, how are you here? You're like everywhere. I was coaching my daughter's sixth grade team and Sunday, like at 3, and the school's closed. We have the gym open. And all of a sudden, Dr. Arnett walks in. I'm like, this is crazy. As a superintendent, what's the biggest challenge that you face? And then also, what's the thing you love the most about your role?
So I would, in a crazy kind of way, I would say the two biggest challenges we face are making sure that policy is up to date so that we can stay current or become mm-hmm. more current. We don't find necessarily that policy sometimes lag behind. And just, you know, keeping that forward motion. But honestly, I think you hit it on the head when you started, which is the electronics and the social media. Really, it's a constant battle. Teaching our kids to behave and feel healthy has, in the last few years, really become the biggest challenge. We worry about our kids all the time. So if you're a superintendent, you most likely started out as a teacher. And if you started out as a teacher, you most likely started because you love kids. Mm-hmm. And so the thing you want to do most is you want to care about your kids and you want to protect them and keep them healthy in every way possible. And I would say that right now is probably the biggest challenge. What do I love most? I love challenging the system. I love our kids. I think we have the sweetest kids in the world. If I could, I would just envelop them in my arms and protect them 24/7. But they are our future. You know, we talk about this all the time. You know, one day I'm going to end up in the hospital. I want to make sure that every single person who's taking care of me is compassionate and kind. I want to make sure that they're problem solvers and thinkers. I want to make sure that, you know, they're going to take care of me the way I hope I've taken care of them all these years. So, you know, in the end, we all end up in the same place, right? And so don't you just want kindness and compassion? Yeah.
What have you guys learned on kindness? Because I think it's the most important thing they can learn in school, as you mentioned. Like, what have you guys learned over time that this helps us produce kinder people in the world?
Well, I think the first thing is you got to model that kindness, right? Yep. So I will tell you, I have zero tolerance for people who are not kind. You will not show up at our board meetings, for example, and be rude or mean. We just won't tolerate it. Mm-hmm. I won't in my private life. I sure as heck won't in my professional life. And so I think if you model that kindness and you model that compassion, most of the time you get the same thing back. That's my number one rule, I guess.
No, that's good. I love it. That's good.
I am that parent. Oh. If you asked my kids, they would say I was the strictest parent in the class. I'm not sure I completely agree. But putting guardrails around and making sure that your kids are protected, but they know what the rules are and they stay within those guidelines, I think is important.
Yeah, very important. My coach, Tom Izzo, coach basketball, Hall of Fame coach at Michigan State, always said this, and it's true. Tough love's the best love. It means you care. Like, you can still be kind and tough, but you can be strict. And that's actually the greatest love, is when you're strict or tough and not being the person that's like, yeah, go ahead, here's some more candy. Yeah, have your phone all night. No, that's good. Now, technology, AI's taking the world by storm. Obviously, it's coming in education quickly. What are you doing at Baldwin around artificial intelligence?
So I'll take a step back on that question first and tell you that one of the things that we have instituted here, starting in grade 6 and going through grade 12 in our ELA and social studies curriculum, is information literacy curriculum. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you graduate high school and you forget how to do algebra, you'll be fine. You know, you'll either have to go on Khan Academy and figure it out again, or you won't need it. And so it won't matter. But as an adult, if you do not know if the information being presented to you is real or not real, you have a problem, and we have a problem. So grade 6 through 12, we have an information literacy curriculum that we've partnered with Stony Brook University. So we are really focused on making sure that our kids, as they graduate high school, can tell you if this is real or not real, if it's valid or not valid, where it came from. And it's not just about your news source, right? When we went to school, you had to check your sources. It goes deeper, and AI has made that even more difficult. Yep. So we want our kids to be thinkers. We want them to know where the information comes from. And we want them to know that the information that they are putting forward and making decisions based on is real information.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And then moving forward, is there anything out there that you'd love, magic wand again, that you'd love to see change when it comes to education, specifically K through 12? Because a lot of people say education's broken. You hear that, talking heads out there, and maybe that's a minority that's getting a lot of the news because it's, you know, sensational. First of all, do you think it's broken? And then secondly, nothing's perfect. What would you want to improve?
Yeah. So I do not think it's broken. I do think that it's in need of some updating, but it's not K-12 that's preventing the updating. I think that, you know, if a child comes to our doors, it's our job as public educators to have a place for them. And that is what our democracy is based on, right? If you go back historically in your family, you will find that, you know, as new immigrants from wherever they came from, they had access to a public education, which is the greatest gift I think we can give every child. So, you know, do I think it's broken? Absolutely not. Do I think that it's being used as a political pawn? Absolutely. So, you know, I think that our public education system is outstanding in this country, and it doesn't matter where you go, it's outstanding. For me, you know, one of the things we've done here, we hosted a national summit last year, and we brought in industry leaders, policy, national policymakers, K-12 representation, and higher education, and said, so if we are talking about the future of learning, what does it look like? From the industry perspective, what do you need? From policy perspective, what do we need you to do? From higher ed, you know, what do you need to do to prepare the future teachers to work in our classrooms? And in K-12, what do our students need? I think that's a conversation we need to be having. But it is not because our system is broken. It's because we tend to always do what we've always done, and we need to be doing some things a little bit differently.
No, I love that. It makes sense. It's interesting enough, just the other day I was talking to this lady I know, and she grew up in the Netherlands and came over here when she was 14, I believe. And I asked her the difference in the school systems, and she goes, well, in the Netherlands, it's kind of like you go to school. It's more like college, where it's just kind of just school. Like you just kind of go in and it's like school. There's no, all the sports are club, all the musical, all that stuff is separate. And I go, well, which one did you like better? And she goes, oh, I thought this was phenomenal when I came here, because it's just like you're doing some nonprofit stuff. It's just so much more exciting and more well-rounded 360 view as a human being to have all these experiences. So, and the Netherlands are always ranked top five in the world by all these studies that they do. So I just thought it was fascinating to hear that insight from her. So that was wonderful. And then the media, I love that you guys are doing so that you understand information, where did it come from? You know, is it real? What are the outcomes you're seeing from the program? How long have you had this implemented? What are some of the outcomes that you're hearing and seeing from doing this?
Yep. So we've been doing this for 3 years now. And I think the outcomes really straight from our students' mouth. And they will tell you that they see information, whether it's on social media or online or in their news feeds, they see it more critically. They ask themselves really important questions. You know, where did this come from? Who posted it? Can I validate this in multiple places so that I know that it's true? And honestly, one of the most important things is this question of, should I repost it? Should I forward it, right? Because that's how bad information gets spread, just by people reposting it. Yeah. The fact that they're asking themselves those questions first, and that I'm hearing this from them, they're telling me that they are questioning what they should acknowledge, what they should believe, what they should repost, gives me encouragement that this is, I mean, besides being able to read and write and you know, the basics, to me, this is a basic, right? Mm-hmm. And when you ask the question about, you know, public schools and is there a crisis in public education, you know, we happen to be doing this information literacy curriculum. I think everyone needs to be doing this information literacy curriculum. Yeah. So what does it take to make sure that every student who graduates from high school in our country is getting the same level of skills that they're getting here in Baldwin?
No, I love it. I love that your students are questioning, hey, should I repost this? Maybe I need to dig in this a little more before I just fire this off. So that's a huge win. Anything that we didn't cover?
You know, what I would say is when you think about when you went to school, and we all did this, right? We sat in rows and columns and we listened to a teacher teach, and then we took a test that was probably multiple choice or true, false, or had an essay. I think that we need to be asking questions like, if industry is asking us to have kids who work collaboratively, how are we creating that experience for our kids in school? If we know that we're never going to take a multiple choice test again, but we're going to have to demonstrate our understanding, and in what other ways can we demonstrate our understanding to get kids used to the process of doing that? For me, that is really what public schools should look like. It certainly is what it looks like here. We're not 100% there, but unfortunately things don't happen that quickly. And so, you know, what can we do as a parent, as a teacher, as an administrator, to move that agenda forward? I think we need to be talking about that more.
No, I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. Thanks for being such a leader, Dr. Cammy, and I know all the people in Baldwin and beyond are benefiting from it. Thanks for taking the time, because I know if I gave you 48 hours a day, you still wouldn't get everything done and need to be everywhere that you need to be. So thank you for all that you do, and thanks for taking the time to join us here today. Hopefully we can talk again in the near future, but just want to say thank you. My kids are in the public school system and I couldn't be happier. So it's a wonderful thing. There's always room for improvement, and people like you are out there pushing the envelope, making sure that you got to leave to learn, and that, hey, yeah, we're going to use these tools, but that we got to learn how to use these, because they're going to change. It's not the tool, but these tools will change. So we're going to give you that ability to adapt and learn and understand what you're digesting. So thank you so much. And thank you so much for joining the SuperU podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for doing the podcast. Appreciate that you put these topics out front and center. It's really important.
So thanks again for listening to today's SuperU podcast. Again, it's a podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. And if you want to pay it forward, make sure you go post a review for the SuperU podcast, because what that will do, it'll allow others that aren't familiar with our podcast to discover it. And hopefully that allows them to unlock and unleash their inner superpower. So that's it for today's show. I'm your host, Equal Man, reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
Seven.
Six,
five,
four,
three, two,
one.
Super, 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 super,
super you.